I'd like to call the Oro Valley Town Council budget study session to order. And Mr. Standish, roll call, please.
Vice Mayor Root.
Here.
Councilmember Bowen.
Here.
Councilmember Green.
Here.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy.
Here.
Councilmember Nicholson. Councilmember Solomon. And Mayor Winfield.
Here. Let it be noted that five of the seven council members are in attendance at the beginning of our meeting. Mr. Standish, if you would read item one, the budget study session.
Presentation and discussion of the fiscal year 21-22 town manager's recommended budget.
Thank you. The following departments will be presenting this evening. Parks and Recreation Director Christy Diaz-Trahan, Community and Economic Development CED Director Paul Melcher, Administration Functions General Administration Assistant Town Manager Chris Corneliuson, and Capital Budget Senior Budget Analyst Michael Dykman. And we'll begin with our Parks and Recreation Director, Christy Diaz-Trahan. Thank you, Christy. Oh, and let me say that there are currently 28 participants joining us. That includes council, staff, and members of the public.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
Councilmember Nicholson has said that he's on but can't be seen, so or something.
Okay.
So just letting IT know that maybe he needs to be promoted or something.
Okay.
Thanks.
All right, thank you. So six of seven council members present.
Yeah, hopefully he'll get promoted here to panelists soon.
Mr. Mayor, can you hear me?
We can. Welcome.
Thank you. Well, good evening, Mayor and Council. Earlier this week, I was reading an article in a Park and Recreation Business Magazine, and it was titled Nostalgia for the Future. And the first paragraph of the article, the author wrote, quote, "In community, we heal." He was speaking about healing from the pandemic and the added burden of dealing with riots and discourse across our country. He went on to state that households are separated more and more politically and religiously and socially, and that new ideas are emerging on how we can regain a better sense of community and of oneness. This solution revolves around one word. That word is connection. The article is related to connection in terms of the trails and roadways, but I found it interesting as it relates to us. The Oro Valley Park and Recreation vision before you in red is inspire connection through recreation. Connection to each other, connection to our community, and connection to our nature. This budget presentation highlights how the vision is implemented next fiscal year. This work is a collaborative effort by my outstanding management team, Matt Jankowski, Nick Scala, Brandon Lau, Tom Ellis, Lynn-Ann Dellerman-Silverthorne, and Bernie Eaton. I also want to give a big shout out to Chris Corneliuson for his guidance, to the hard work and patience of the budget team, and lastly, the visionary leadership of Mary Jacobs. Next slide, please. The Park and Recreation budget starts with the general plan, the big picture, and our commitment to the community goals and the environmental goals. High quality park and recreation open space systems that are accessible and comprehensive and connected that serves our community needs, and a diverse and enriching quality education opportunities and arts and culture and experiences to all residents, and promote Oro Valley as an ideal destination for economic activity and shopping and culture. And in terms of environmental, the protection and preservation of significant cultural sites, properties, and resources that enhance the community character and heritage. Next slide, please. From that big picture, we drill down to the two-year strategic plan. Specifically, recreation and culture is focus area two. Goal 2A is really related to our built environment and investing in and maintain a high quality park and recreation trail system that is accessible, comprehensive, and what? Connected and serves the community's needs. Goal 2B, support recreation, culture, and arts programs that provide opportunities for residents to connect to their community. Next slide, please. The Park and Recreation Department consists of 6 work units: administration, aquatics, community center, park management, recreation and culture, and golf. The units work together as a team to ensure continuity of service delivery. In real world terms, what does this mean? It means when someone goes to one of our parks, they just know that we care. They know because they walk into a park that is well-groomed, that's litter-free, and the restrooms are clean and safe. When they call our office, they're greeted with a warm, "How may I help you?" And at the conclusion of their conversation, before they hang up, they hear, "Thank you, it was my pleasure." And then if they go to our website or our Facebook page, they find information quickly and easily and very accessible, because we care, and that's how we connect to our community. Next slide, please. The administration division. So over the past year and a half, we've been connecting big time to our community. The master plan process was a heavy lift, and we hit the ground running in December of 2019 with this project. But we had to quickly pivot in March due to COVID, and honestly, it didn't make a dent in our community engagement. Through surveys and online feedback, we were able to come up with a really great plan, and that will be on your agenda in the next 13 days. The actions you took last night, which, by the way, on behalf of the thousands of people that we heard from over this last year and a half, thank you. The result is a huge kickstart to implement that plan. The admin division will also focus on the partnership with Amphi School District on the marketing and promotions of our programs and services as we begin to open up, and also begin the development of an in-house produced trails plan. Next slide, please. Within the aquatic division, we will continue to focus our efforts on lifeguard recruitment, retention, and training. The aquatic center is like no other. You have to be able to swim 15 feet down and recover someone and bring them to the side. It's not like no other. It's not like you can walk out in a 5-foot deep pool. It's very, very critical staff that we have there, and it's important in terms of our training and retention. We're also going to be ramping back up the events, and with the first one this year actually scheduled for next weekend. It's going to be hosted by Fast Swim Team. And I can tell you those kids are super excited to be able to compete against somebody else, not just their own teammates. We will also invest in a new filtration system and ozone generator that will result in improved water quality and reduced chemical consumption. This team will also be the lead on the multi-generational programming leadership objective as it relates to strategic plan goal 2B. Next slide, please. The community center will focus on recruitment and retention of community center memberships through engagement and events. Hosting these events builds connections and is key to retention. Currently, we have 700 memberships that equate to about 1,200 people. Before COVID in February of 2020, it was almost double. We had 1,200 memberships and over 2,100 people. So we have a lot of catching up to do. We will also be adding an access control and cameras to the facility for enhanced security, as well as replacing the 2 shade canopies over the 2 ramadas on site and adding one over our pool mechanical system. And this group of folks will also be tackling the community wellness programming related to strategic plan objective 2B. Next slide, please. The Recreation and Cultural Division, in the Master Plan survey, the community told us their number one ranked program across all generations is community events. Not surprising, because that's where people connect, right? They connect to each other, they learn about new places in Oro Valley, and they connect to our community. So this coming year, we'll be focusing on bringing back the wonderful events our community has come to look forward to. And actually, if you don't have plans tomorrow night, shameless plug, we have a concert at Steampunk Ranch that starts at 7 o'clock. It's free on the lawn, and the performance is The Final Approach. Anyway, back to the presentation. So a couple months ago, the Historic Preservation Commission approved the town's very first home to be listed on the local historic registry. Staff have been working hard to get this going, and it was really jump-started as a result of us attaining two University of Arizona students as their capstone project, and they really helped to take this project to the finish line. And as a matter of fact, those two students are participating in their presentation ceremony today. So it was a great project, and we plan to continue our efforts in identifying those historic registry locations. The cultural and recreation team will be moving out to Steampunk Ranch later this fall, and as a result, the work and programming at Steampunk Ranch will begin to ramp up once they're there on site. Staff in this division will also be focusing on the volunteer program and the senior task force as it relates to strategic plan 2B. Next slide, please. The park management team they've had a heck of a year, right? I mean, we went from amenities being closed, but parks are open, but what's closed, what's open, sanitize this, clean that. It's been a heck of a year, but I can tell you our small, mighty team stepped up to the challenge because, as you know, parks and trails were identified as an essential business, an essential function. And so they were really, really busy, and people experienced our parks oftentimes like they hadn't in previous times. This year, the focus is, we'll continue with the focus on the health and safety in mind. We will be adding a third dog bay at Naranjo Park on the north. And that's going to be for, you know, the kind of frail, vulnerable dogs that still need to get out and socialize, but just can't manage with all of the crazy, either big rambunctious dogs or small snippy dogs. So we'll have a space for them. And we will also continue our overseeding program in our sport fields. At Riverfront Park, we will be installing bollard-style lighting along the walking path. So that way the users that are early morning or late evening, they have a safe and enjoyable lit facility that they can utilize. We will also be coordinating field days with our youth organizations so that way we can work with them side by side to make improvements in our parks and also in terms of building community. Next slide, please. So this is a budget presentation, so I felt the need to have some kind of numbers in here, not just pictures. And so what you see before you is really a comparative of our current fiscal year to next fiscal year. For the most part, it's relatively flat. The two areas where there's a slight increase are in the Aquatics Center and Community Center, and that's really related to personnel as we ramp our programming back up, as we open hours that we'll need more personnel to manage that. And so, Mayor, next up is Bernie Eaton with Indigo Golf. Bernie will be presenting the marketing focus and how that is going to support 45 holes of golf and food and beverage. And then once he's done, we can open it up for questions and answers. But before I turn it over to Bernie, I wanted to let you know that last month during Indigo Golf Partners' 32nd annual awards banquet, Bernie Eaton was recognized as the Western Region GM of the Year. That's a testament to the outstanding golf professional that's running our shop. Bernie, you're up, my friend.
Thank you, Christy. Good evening, Mr. Mayor, council members. It's my pleasure to present to you the fiscal year 21-22 budget this evening. Next slide, please. Talk a little bit about Indigo Golf Partners and who we are and what we do. Our motto is golf for everyone. And I think you're going to see that as we move forward through the presentation this evening and as the results have shown so far this year. Our operational focus and kind of our marketing strategy moving forward for this year is to focus on 45 holes of golf with Bush Ridge course opening in November. Retaining the loyalty base, both in the membership side and the mobile app, is very key. There's been a boom in golf, as we know, that kind of the magic potion for golf, who would have guessed would have been a pandemic, but it seems that we've had a great reaction to golf and being able to safely participate in an activity in the open space with friends. So far, what we have is we have over 1,500 mobile app users in a program that we introduced in late August. And we use this platform to drive golf, and we use it to drive food and beverage specials while we maintain rate integrity. So many times you might see the online tee times where the rates drop significantly. We use our programs to maintain rate integrity and to grow our membership base and our mobile app base. With a membership, as you know, we've used kind of a balanced approach this year as we felt that there needs to be equal emphasis on public play as there is on membership drive. And through that, we've been very successful. And we'll touch on that a little bit in the next slide. Customer acquisition, obviously, we want to continue to grow new customers. One of the initiatives that we've done is starting last month, at the end of the month, we've introduced Spark Golf League. So we looked at a period of time, Thursday afternoon. There's some people that may want to play in leagues and do some type of things. So we did a 5 o'clock league and we said, boy, if we could get, 25, 30, 40 people interested, that would be great. We have over 100 unique players who are interested in league play. And right now, until we get a little more daylight, we're running that number at 48 players on a weekly basis at 5 p.m. on a Thursday. And we're going to grow that to 60 players or more once we have a little more daylight hours. We've also been very successful with our PGA Junior League and our youth programs and our adult programs. Our PGA Junior League team remains popular. We have 14 kids on our team for this season. That practice has already started, and Mark and his team have been doing a great job with that. We've also been running during this season, as you can see on the screen, youth golf clinics every Saturday. We've had 150 unique children ages 4 to 15 participate in those clinics every Saturday, varying times throughout the season. We've also focused on adult programming with Get Golf Ready. We've had over 80 unique adults participate in Get Golf Ready programs, which is 5 classes for $99. As we said, should be something for everyone. With the graduates of this program, this will lead way to beginner leagues and things of that nature where we can continue to fill needs and gaps in our tee sheets and drawing more players to the facility, to the community center, to Push Ridge. And this in turn down the road leads to more membership sales and food and beverage results. Focusing on community outreach events has always been, again, what we are is we are a partner. We're a partner with the town of Oro Valley. We're a partner with Christy and the Parks and Recreation Department. As restrictions continue to ease, obviously we're looking forward to hopefully this year a spooktacular and some other events that have been traditionally held in the past. Some word is, we've reached out to Dave Perry with the Oro Valley Business Chamber, trying to get some business events like an On Par networking league and things like that, where some of the businesses in talking to Mr. Perry is that they've been a little bit slower to feel more comfortable in a social gathering. So we have time on this, and we're waiting for the comfort levels to increase, and we will reach out to Mr. Perry and have some interesting events. Also, going back to Junior League for one moment, we've actually have continuing since the restrictions have lifted, we are still partnering with the First Tee of Tucson. This month, we have 14 children in the program, which is a 25% increase this month over previous months. So golf is popular among the youths. You can see a new PGA 17 and under Junior League is what we're going to be creating this summer and this fall. Children age out of PGA Junior League at 13 years of age, and there's kind of a gap between age 14 and when they graduate from high school as to where they go play and what they do in an organized setting. We are going to be forming a 17 and under league to give these children an opportunity to play and grow and feel comfortable at El Conquistador. Next slide, please. Some budget assumptions that we went through for this year's budget. At the 36 hole, we will have all 36 holes open from July 1st through April 30th. The assumption is that the irrigation project will move forward on the Conquistador course. May 1st through June 30th would mean that we would run on 18 holes. Membership levels, we anticipate to remain stable at 290 full-time golf memberships. With the implementation of our programs that we've done with the Sunset membership, expanding a little bit on the corporate side, our 30, 60, 90-day memberships, we've been able to steadily grow and now maintain a number at 270. And as we know, the council guidance was 275 memberships full-time by the end of June of 2021. So we will be well above that number heading into the next fiscal year. Our player development programs and overall experience will help us retain a large part of these new golfers. Everything seems to say that the COVID effect in Arizona was anywhere between 14 and 20%, depending on the region. Our numbers were significantly higher than that due to our programming, due to the experience and the fun and enjoyable experience that we've been able to provide. We anticipate that golf will remain flat as to kind of where we sit, possibly a slight decrease. We don't foresee golf continuing to rise above the dramatic levels that they rose in 2020. Our staffing model remains the same for all department with no anticipated increase at this time in minimum wage. Next slide, please. On the food and beverage side, restaurant operations are going to show an increase in revenue as the pandemic restrictions are gradually eased. We have already booked four weddings that have committed. We have another one that we're about to sign for the fall and the spring of next year. So this is a good sign for food and beverage, is that banquets, we're hopefully going to see a return to banquets, and which will help generate more revenue for our facility. Slight expansion of restaurant hours during peak season, January through April. We will be sending out a member survey to our membership later this summer and at the end of July after our first year of management, kind of saying, hey, how do we do? What can we improve? What would you like to see? General comments from people that we've talked to already is possibly an hour here or there on certain nights of the week. So not a dramatic increase in hours, but a slight expansion of the restaurant. We staff based on demand. As we see more business, we staff up. As we see less business, we staff down and manage appropriately. Next slide, please. Push Ridge assumptions that we will open November 1st, 2021 through April 30th, 2022 with a 7-day a week operation, closed Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year's Day. These are typically the three slowest days of the winter in terms of play. So we are going to be closed on those three holidays only. We are assuming 35 rounds a day based on a cart fleet of 28 carts. This is an increase over previous conversations that we've had of 20. After evaluations with Chris Cornelison and Christy, we feel that we can manage the operation with 28 carts. And our assumption is that the golf operations will be based out of the current tennis shop. We are hopeful that there may be an opportunity to use the old golf shop, but we are not counting on that. If that is in place, then that does give us a greater opportunity for food and beverage and merchandise offerings and sales. But we are going to assume that we are operating out of the tennis pro shop for now. Next slide, please. We take a look at the fiscal year 1920, our forecast for 2021 and our budget for 2022. You can see increase in rounds from 21-22 over 1920, but slightly down to 2021. This would be mainly due to the closure of the 18 holes for two of the months during this time frame. This is still what we see is revenues projected of approximately $150,000 greater with this budget than the five-year pro forma we provided in the RFP process back in April of last year. We do see an increase in the membership based on the 290, and that leads us to the total revenue of just shy of $3 million. Next slide, please. Our expenses are running overall. Projected expenses are $42,000 less than the five-year pro forma that was provided in April. And the overall EBITDAR, which is your gross profit or loss before any interest, taxes, depreciation, is $54,000 better than the original five-year pro forma provided during the RFP process. We do see a slight increase in golf course maintenance labor and a slight increase in utilities during this process. This is mainly due to the golf maintenance staff was running without a key position for most of this year that we have filled later in this current fiscal year, but thus the increase in the golf course maintenance labor in the line for 21-22. But overall, a loss of $882,000 compared to the pro forma of $936,000 and much less than the last fiscal year, 1920, of $1.518 million. Next slide, please. Food and beverage, we do see here, again, as we talked about with some banquets and weddings, an increase in projected revenues for next year. And again, a slight expansion in hours. So we would be expanding. That leads to an increase in payroll, obviously, with some expanded hours and larger gathering events, such as banquets and weddings, require more staffing in the kitchen and staffing on the floor. Our operational expenses will be increased this year for next year, obviously over this year, with the restaurant being run out of the food and beverage operations running out of the Garden Cafe for most of the summer of 2020 and into October. So we feel that running out of the restaurant full time with some reduced hours, the overlook in the summertime, we will have a slight increase in expenses over 19-20, but not significant. Cost of sales remain in line. Zach and Tori, our food and beverage director and our chef, have done an outstanding job over the last 7 months in controlling, making cost of goods much better over the previous years. So we are able to show a little bit better profit line by maintaining our costs on liquor and food. So overall, actual year-end 19 to 20, based on the guides and parameters in the contracts that were set forward between the town and Indigo, in 19-20, the EBITDA or operational loss was $146,522. We are forecasting a profit of $16,837 this year, and for 21-22, a profit of just over $26,000. Next slide, please. Push Ridge Nine Hole. Again, we've been through this previously in prior council meetings. So 6,675 rounds to a previous full year operationally of 3,878. Our gross income of 173,000. We feel that there is an opportunity here for some leagues, at whether it's men's leagues, ladies' leagues, couples leagues, from the working with the Friends of Push Ridge Group, identifying their needs and wants to generate some leads. We feel that there's an opportunity also for some monthly seasonal memberships at a reasonable cost for the nine-hole facility. Next slide, please. And these numbers, again, the operational expenses are based on the operating months and 7 days a week that we projected. The difference between the March 1st estimate and the 21-22 budget on the bottom line is the addition of the 8 carts for the lease, everything else remaining flat. But with more golf carts, you're going to pay more in the lease. And that's the $7,000 difference in the two numbers here. Next slide. Back to Christy.
Yeah, Mr. Mayor, that concludes our presentation, and so we are happy to field some answers. And pardon my distraction, I got to tell you, I'm in my office, and there are kids out here on swim team that are holding up their kickboard as a shield and with sticks. And anyway, it's super fun to watch. So, Thanks, Chris. Maybe not for parents.
Thank you, Christy. Thank you, Bernie. Councilmember Bowen.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I have a question for Bernie Eaton regarding leasing. I had noticed earlier on in the presentation, we had shown a significant decrease in our leasing costs coming up. But at the end of the presentation, we see a slight increase with the 8 carts that are going to be added at Push Ridge. Can you talk about the overall leasing picture and why we might see a general decrease, even though we're actually going to be leasing 8 more carts due to Push Ridge reopening?
Absolutely. Council Member Bowen, on the decrease, are you talking on the 36-hole line item or the...
Yes, I saw, if we could go back, I saw, you know, 400,000 for a fiscal year, and then it dropped to like just a little less than 200,000. And what causes that drop?
Absolutely, Council Member Bowen. The golf course maintenance equipment lease came to term at the end of August. So we had 2 months of golf course maintenance equipment at roughly $21,000 per month. And then that number, that dropped off starting in September. So that's why you see the decrease in leases at the 36 hole, because we did no longer are paying the golf course maintenance equipment lease. We now own that equipment.
Okay. Thank you. That's my question, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Councilmember Green.
Yes, thank you very much for both presentations. I saw a mention of the school system in there, AMPI, and a partnership, and I'm interested in how that might work. Right now, the school systems are funded from the state, and contributing community money for something that's already paid for by the state made me kind of scratch my head and wonder how that's going to work. So if you can help me with that, Christy, I would like it.
Mm-hmm, absolutely, Councilmember Green. So that's part of the town council's 2-year strategic leadership plan. It's one of the initiatives. And where we will start is working with the school district specifically related to a partnership at Coronado K-8 related to sport fields. The baseball sport fields up there were actually built with Pima County bond dollars. And so it would be a partnership, certainly with AMPI School District, but also Pima County. And what the intent is to provide improvements to that facility for our residents that utilize that facility to play Little League baseball and Little League softball. And as part of the process we went through for master plan, it was identified that that was the most cost-effective way to provide high quality programming and services to those users, as opposed to constructing brand new facilities.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Christy, with the AMPHI school agreement, will our leagues have some priority?
Councilmember Jones-Ivy, I don't know that yet. It will, you know, certainly we have a lot of work ahead of us. Mm-hmm. There are, you know, our requirements, the school district requirements, and how Pima County plays a part in it because it was a bond-funded project. Okay. But we can, you know, certainly work through there. Right now, I can tell you the main high-power user outside of school, mm-hmm, is Laurel Valley Little League.
Okay.
The significant majority of kids participating in that league live in Laurel Valley.
Okay. All right. So are there, what other leagues are involved? Do we know?
I do know that the Laurel Valley Fast Pitch League and their home court, if you will, is at Riverfront Park. But because specifically in the spring, when the leagues are larger, they, mm-hmm, need additional space to practice, and they utilize the fields at Coronado as well.
Okay. Because, Christy, I would certainly like to see our teams, and I do understand that there are more of our teams than anyone else, but I would, with this partnership, like to see where we have some priorities, you know, for our teams.
Yeah, thank you. And I can tell you, I've spoken to the leadership of Oro Valley Little League, and they mm-hmm. are fully supportive of that. And Great. Little League by nature do fundraisers because they want to, they really want not only to put some sweat equity into it, but some skin mm-hmm. in the game. So that way they can have some ownership. So there might be that, you know, that 3P opportunity there.
All right, great. Thanks.
Other questions? Vice Mayor Barrett? And then Council Member Green.
Okay. I have quite a few. So if Council Member Green wants to go first, I'm wondering if maybe his relates to the current discussion and mine might veer off.
Council Member Green?
I don't know.
Mostly what I wanted to say was to thank Bernie Eaton for his magic. He's done a wonderful job with the town courses, attracting new members. Every time I play, there's someone from out of the area who's enjoying the courses. And at the end of the day, they all want to come back. So congratulations to him for doing a great job.
Thank you, Councilmember Green.
Vice Mayor Barrett.
Thanks. I'll echo that. Thanks, Bernie. So I'll start with Bernie and ask my questions for Bernie. So good job with the restaurant. Do you anticipate that we can continue to keep the restaurant profitable as we come out of COVID restrictions and increase staffing?
Vice Mayor Barrett, yes, I believe we can. I part of it is people feeling comfortable dining again. That's a big number. We've seen over this fiscal year, we were very slow at the start. Summer months are typically a little slower traditionally. And then as we kind of ramped back up and got into December was, close to what we anticipated, maybe a little bit off the pace. Then January was a little bit better. February better. March better. April is even better. Those numbers aren't finalized, but our projections are they're even better than March. So people are starting to feel comfortable again. And the biggest thing that will really drive a food and beverage operation is weddings and banquets. And that is our number one focus, is whether it's a 30-person business council meeting or a 100-person wedding. Those are typically your higher dollar generating, higher profit margin numbers, typically with a buffet where we can run with a little bit less staffing as we, hopefully we can get back to the point where we're not having to do serve buffets with the staff having to be on hand to serve them. So I feel that we can continue that we kind of have weathered the storm in our ship. And now I think we're going to hopefully see some smooth waters ahead of us.
Okay, thank you. And how can you tell me a little bit more about how the restaurant worked during the pandemic? You mentioned that you were using the garden cafe downstairs. Did you just serve prepackaged food or?
Correct. So we were running the garden cafe approximately 52 hours a week during the summer, serving packaged burritos and sandwiches in the morning, and then wraps and sandwiches and some hot dogs in the afternoons with some beer offerings and non-alcoholic drink offerings and things of that nature. We feel that we can be much more profitable. Right now we are operating the Overlook restaurant 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. daily during this stretch of time in May, where by going up in the restaurant, you have draft beer selections, a larger liquor selection, a full menu, and we will be moving our menu to a breakfast-lunch combination menu come June. So that you can kind of have breakfast all day for those that want to do it or things of that nature. And we've also been successful with our Easter brunch and our Mother's Day brunch coming up. We have 90 on the books for Mother's Day. We had 90 for Easter. So like I said, those are where we make our living right there.
Hey, great. Thanks. Let's see. So did you show in that last slide that the final cost to the town this year would be $571,000? Is that
correct?
What
that
I
is,
saw?
Yes, Vice Mayor Barrett, that's correct.
Okay, so that's even significantly better than the number that I presented last night of $905,000. And is that because we've added the HOA contribution? I'm trying to figure out how we got from the 905 projection to the 571, because that's great.
Vice Mayor Barrett, sorry, my mistake. The number I'm showing you is an operational before any push ridge expenses and cash flows. Wendy Gomez, Michael Dykeman, and I updated those numbers that it's somewhere around 675. When you throw in all the, again, the Push Ridge does not include the capital expenditures for the pump station, the things of that nature are not included right now in that 571. I'm just showing you a 36-hole La Cunada residence operating profit or loss.
Okay, and then it will be a little bit more because of the capital improvements being put into the Push course.
Vice Mayor Barrett, yes, those are tied into the 670 number.
Okay. And so when do we include the HOA contributions? Maybe that's a question for accounting or for Mary. You know when the HOA contributions come in? Because I don't think that's being reflected in these numbers, is it?
Vice Mayor Barrett, I will defer to either Mary or someone in accounting on that, as that we have not recognized that in our financials.
Okay.
It's not recognized in the Gulf, in Indigo's financials, but it is recognized in the Community Center Fund as a whole. So it doesn't go toward, Indigo's expenses versus their revenue. That those are the numbers that Bernie keeps track of. And then we pull all of that together into the overall fund analysis.
Okay, but I mean, if we were to take the HOA contributions against the 571, then it's doing even better, right? That's kind of how we made the calculations when we were looking at those analyses and deciding the holes and things. We did subtract it from
the goal. We did. I'm going to, since these numbers have just literally been updated this week because of the fact that the Gulf is going to actually run this summer, and since we're not doing the irrigation, I'm going to defer that to Wendy or Michael or Dave to answer.
Okay. Or maybe you can just give us an update back to us with an update for the updated numbers. And then just, I guess what's been confusing to me is, you know, if the HOA contribution is included in that or not. And it kind of feels like it should be, since that's where, you know, that's the comparison that was made previously. But I understand that it just goes into the fund. But just so my mind can keep all the comparisons, you know, even against each other.
We'll do a follow-up for council and highlight out for you specific to golf and then our updated projections for the fund.
Okay.
Just to add, there is a difference between the what council adopted in the five-year pro forma. I think that's what you're referring to, Vice Mayor Barrett, from maybe 2 years ago now.
Uh-huh.
I think that number also included not just HOA contributions, but as part of that discussion and motion was, I think, some of the anticipated sales tax generated from the courses, maybe also due to utility taxes, and I think that was also included in that pro forma. And then once we conducted the RFP and negotiated the new contract with Indigo, we did not include that as part of Indigo's collected revenues. So they are different, but we'll lay it out more in detail as a follow-up.
I think we understood then that we were just looking at that sales tax collection just as an informational item, because that wasn't going into the community center fund. I understood that. Yeah, when we were looking at that.
In town manager's recommended budget on page 7 of 116, when it talks about the community center fund summary, it has a section in there called miscellaneous, and that's where the 126 is, and that's where that would be recognized, as well as where the charges for service and local tax. So it's recognized within the total fund. It's not specifically associated with golf, if you will.
Okay. So then when the numbers come out, theoretically, we could, you know, just keep that in mind and of the HOA contributions as well. Okay. That's great. Thank you. Thanks, Bernie, for that. Do your numbers for the future budget include the projected water rate increases that we discussed last night, or will they need to be updated to reflect those?
Vice Mayor Barrett, I would have to check with my regional director, Tony Marino, to see what they did when they put the pro forma together.
Okay,
I can get back. I can get back to you on that.
Okay. Yeah, no problem. It's just all the pieces kind of moving at the same time. And then I have a question. Some citizens who live along the course have contacted me, and I can follow up separately as well, but I just thought I'd bring it up and ask the basic question about walking on the course, and if it's possible for there to be some hours in the evening when the course can be appropriately shared or something similarly to what's done in Sun City, so that individuals in the public can walk on the course. They've shared stories of concern with, you know, children and golfers and those kinds of concerns. So is there any possibility, how would that affect golf or the revenues if something like that were implemented?
Vice Mayor Barrett, I can follow up with you on that topic after meeting with Christy Diaz-Trahan and some others, as there are some, there's probably some legality issues in terms of, you know, non-golfers being on the golf course and golfers, and traditionally there are some heartaches that come with a membership that I'm not able to play at certain times and things of that nature, but I can certainly follow up with Christy and then follow up with yourself.
Okay. So you do operate the courses from sunup to sundown, basically?
Yes, Vice Mayor Barrett.
Okay. Okay. I think that's it. Now can I turn to Christy and ask a few for Christy?
All right. Please do.
Thanks, Christy. Sorry, Ms. Diaz, I'm being a little more informal than I should be. Okay. Will we be opening our pool this summer for recreational purposes, perhaps at a reduced capacity and not just swim team?
Vice Mayor Barrett, yes, they will be opening on the 29th.
Okay, great. That's good news. I wanted to hear a little bit more about the third dog bay at Naranja Park. I thought we already had a third dog bay. Are we adding yet another? Is it a fourth dog bay or?
So Vice Mayor Barrett, we had started on that project and then it just kind of got put on pause as we were doing the design for the playground, because if you recall, we had to do a whole roadway realignment. And so we weren't sure how that was going to affect. The original thought was to add that third bay and then open up like a middle panel so the large dogs had larger space. But what we've found in recent months is we have large dogs that are, they're just old and or coming back from a surgery, or and so they want to be in the small dog park because those large dogs are rambunctious. And so then there's conflict, there's human conflict, there's not dog conflict, there's human conflict because there's, quote, large dogs in the small dog park. And so our thought was, if we just had a space where that way, you know, sort of like, I don't want to call it a timeout because it's not a matter of bad behavior. It's just a matter of they're just at a different point in the dog life, but yet they still want to go out, and the human wants to take them out. So that's really the spirit of it. So we've done some improvement. We've pulled irrigation. We're going to be throwing some concrete slab. We have a shade structure on order, but we anticipate it really being able to come online next fiscal year.
Okay, sounds good, thanks. I'm glad that we have this available for the humans who enjoy using it with their dogs. all right, and then I'll just make a pitch. I'd like to see included in the budget some benches or seating and some shade at the playground at Naranja Park. There's not quite enough seating for the adults that sit around the playground. One morning, few weeks ago, I was at the playground. It was one of the first really warm days that we had. So, you know, shade was becoming more of a challenge and an issue. And there weren't that many people at the playground because it was, school had already opened and it was a school morning. But I heard four separate groups comment to each other, gee, there's not enough places to sit down here, or something to that effect. And they weren't saying it to me. They didn't know who I was, anything like that. They were just commenting it to other people at the park. And so in the space of half an hour, you know, four people commented on that. And so I just feel like maybe along that small hill that's between the playground and the fields, there is some need for some benches or maybe some trees. And anyway, I'd like to see it included in the budget. I don't know how the rest of the council feels, but with the completion of the park and the shade structure and those other items in the budget, I'd like to see the benches included. So, and then my other last question for you, Christy, is can you tell us about the plans for improving the field conditions, other than obviously the attempt to get more fields? What else do we have in terms of improving the field conditions? I know it's been a challenge this year with the pandemic.
It really is overuse. That's what it is. It's just, think of an athletic injury. You use your shoulder too much, it's overuse, it needs to rest. And so that's what we're gonna do primarily in the summer, is we've already identified times to pull the fields offline from access. Go in and make the improvements, and then just let the turf grow and let it have time to really, the root system to really to intersect with each other, so there's really a good foundation, specifically at Naranja. And that it's tricky because it's a sand-based facility, so it takes a little longer for that root to join together within the sand. But that really is the key. The key is just is pulling them offline, giving us time to go in and maintain in those really rough areas. And then once we're open, then they'll be able to play more so. Also during overseeding, because of the pandemic and really the demand to be out there and play, because we were one of the few facilities that opened our parks. We kind of rushed the overseed season and didn't really allow the Bermuda to take root. It germinated and it looked lovely, but it really takes a little extra time for it to root. And we've been in communication with those user groups and they agree. They're like, look, we need to back off a little bit. Yes, we pressure you because we want to use this space all the time. But they understand what the consequences. So, you know, that really is a solution. Also, we'll be working with the user groups, as I said earlier, to identify some field day and work day. And a lot of times when that happens, then they feel the ownership to, okay, let's back off for another week to let it really get to the position that we need to, so that way they can go back out and play.
Okay, thanks.
You're welcome.
Do we need any additional funding allocated to help improve those field conditions, or it's just simply a question of time?
It's simply a question of time. Thank you.
Thanks. I think you've answered all my questions.
Councilmember Nicholson, did you have a question? Your hand was up earlier and then came down.
Yeah, I was just going to second the shade and the benches is apparent as well. It's, more is always better. My little bald spot in my head gets sunburned really fast, and just sitting out there with the kids, I get out of time before the kids ever do. I forget my baseball cap, but
Nicholson, we have hats for that.
Yeah, I know. I forget mine. I'm a pretty forgetful person, as people might tell. But and one thing, this is into the weeds, but I've seen the little benches for like bus stops. I think Norway does it, where you're sitting at a bus, like a bench swing. Anyways, they're probably really expensive, but I thought that was kind of cute. It was a photo of some old people swinging on the bench waiting for the bus, and I thought that was neat. So I definitely swing with my wife when we're sitting at the park. Anyways, that's it. Thanks.
Thank you.
Bernie, I wanted to acknowledge the recognition that you received. It's certainly well-deserved. And I think I speak for the entire council that how grateful we are for your leadership. You, Roxanne, Zach, and all the members of your team, you've really turned these courses around, and we appreciate that. So thank you, and we hope to see that continue, and we want to do all that we can to support you in continuing those trends. I had a couple of questions, and I love the golf for everyone. So great that there's 14 kids. I hope to see that number increase. I also appreciate, I have a few questions, but I also appreciate your partnership with the chamber. And I realize, we were pretty flat with corporate memberships at one. We've had, you could message it a 400% increase. We have four corporate memberships, and I hope to see that continue to grow. So I really appreciate you working with the chamber to help make that happen. You mentioned that at the Push Ridge course that it will be closed at Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year's. Does that also hold true for the Conquistador course and Kenyatta course?
Mr. Mayor, typically on those days, we run one out of the two courses are open, and it's traditionally a 9 a.m. shotgun start. On a typical day in those months, we see anywhere from, on a normal day, 280 to 300 plus players. Traditionally on the holidays, we'll see less than 75 players total on those days. It's just more spending time with family and at that time. So it's been traditional. It's more offering something for the membership than anything. We traditionally see very little public play at that time on those holidays.
You alluded that the shop might be a possibility of opening. Could you elaborate a little bit about that? I'm talking at the Push Ridge course.
Absolutely, Mr. Mayor. I believe Christy has more information, but we've investigated the possibilities of being able to run out of the old pro shop, and Christy has much more detail than I do on some of the findings and things of that nature. I see she's kind of popped back on.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Mayor. We're still investigating what the possibilities are, and so we're committed really to manage golf out of the tennis shop this first year. Once we can identify the necessary changes that would be needed, then that would have to be a budgetary issue. So. It's still part of the investigation process right now.
Councilmember Green.
As Westward Look comes online in the annexation, and talking to the general manager there, he was looking around for a place for people who come there to golf. In the original plan, they were to have a golf course. Could some sort of shuttle arrangement be worked out with them so that they could come to our municipal courses?
Heck yeah.
Okay.
Any additional questions? Christy and Bernie, we appreciate very much your presentation. We appreciate all that you do. Christy, your staff, the parks and recreation are important a part of our community. I think the statistically valid survey indicated over 90% of our community recognize the Parks and Rec is an important asset that makes sets our community apart. Of course, Naranja Park was, just like our chief, was named best of the Northwest. And I was there also recently talking with some of the folks there getting sunburned. And the majority of folks that I spoke to were actually coming from Marana and surrounding areas for Hope Valley. So. Anyway, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, Council.
All right, looks like it's Paul Melchers up next.
Thank you, Mayor Winfield, members of council. It was a little glitch there. I guess you get to see my trophy room in my exercise room. Usually the virtual environment comes up, so thanks for your patience. I appreciate that. Paul Melcher, Community and Economic Development Director for the Town of Oro Valley. Please, next slide. So, Mayor and members of the Council, I just wanted to reinforce and to the Council what we do in terms of community and economic development. We really look at it as a combined effort, because without planning, we don't have economic development, and economic development really spurs revenues for the town and allows those capabilities of the town to be able to provide all of these great parks and rec and all these other features for residents. When we look at it overall, we take cues mostly from the Your Voice, Our Future general plan that really drives a lot of what we do in the work plan and helps generate ideas from which we can develop the strategic leadership plan. In short, we look at all these planning functions, the permitting and inspections, as one of the key elements that drives our budgetary. We need those elements to keep those elements of planning, development continuing, so that the community can diversify in terms of its economics, the community elements related to housing and recreation. But we also look at it in terms of the inspections that relates to the preservation of public property and health. In terms of the inspection protocols that we adhere to, we really want to make sure that what we're putting out there related to commercial and residential development meets code and is safe and able for people to enjoy. One of the other developments that goes along with planning, though, is business retention and expansion. As we continue to develop the community, we want to make sure that there are opportunities not only for primary recruitment, but for also businesses to expand. We know that that's one of the primary functions, is ensuring that those economic opportunities are available throughout the community. And then we'll also, in going back full circle, expansion of the sales tax base to generate new revenue for the community is key. Next slide, please. I just wanted to touch on some major accomplishments this year, but before I get into the specifics, I need to compliment my staff. As I've been transitioning over it's just starting 5 months now, one of the things that I've learned is without the staff and their ability to accommodate and make accommodations to keep the workflows moving through COVID, we'd certainly be in a different position than we are. As you look down below, one of the areas I wanted to point out is the single family residential permits, the overall permit numbers. Those are roughly double what we've been expecting and experiencing in the past couple years. It's truly a commitment to the staff to make sure that as they adapted to COVID remote work, that they continue to process and keep the permits rolling. We really look at it from community and economic development as that's the key for both permitting and for inspections, is to ensure that as permits come in, they get approved as quickly as possible, but get out the door, and that we can keep the inspections moving forward to keep, to get those houses and those new commercial and retail opportunities up and running. Also wanted to take a moment to recognize the fact that throughout the community, we have OV Safe Steps and the Hardship Grant. Over 216 businesses and a little bit of over $809,000 has been issued in terms of providing community support. I think it really speaks volumes to the town council's commitment to business support. And it's actually one of the functions that we'll be discussing later on in terms of, now that we've gone through OV Safe Steps, we're coming out the back end of the pandemic, how are we going to address business support in the future? Next slide, please. Moving forward, taking cue from the council, one of the really areas of emphasis for the strategic leadership plan was on primary employer attraction. Listening to the council and making that a priority in the budget, we have identified several areas for primary employer marketing and attraction. Moving out of the pandemic, we understand that there'll be a lot more in-person meetings, particularly for the site selectors. So you have an emphasis here on video and digital marketing to get the site selectors to Oro Valley. Once they're here, we want to be able to provide either trips for them or have in the budget to go and meet with the site selectors, but also one of the things that's been a point of emphasis for our marketing team and what we've been looking at in updating our brochures is we want to make sure that we can provide an OV experience. What that means is we do so much in terms of marketing that we tell the community what we're on the site selectors, what we have in terms of offerings from the community, but we really want to show them. So if we can provide some of those experiences so that the site selectors can take those back and really work with the community, with the companies, we know that that'll have a great impact on our ability to attract these primary employers. Next slides, please. As we've also transitioned, our preliminary budget figures included the environmentally sensitive land ordinance and in industry-specific marketing tools as a part of the discussion that was generated also from the strategic leadership plan. One of the things that we're working with, and particularly with the town manager, is reallocating those funds to address some primary employment recruitment issues. That might be additional ways to create specific leads. We know that the town of Oro Valley, once we get them here and we can demonstrate the quality of life initiatives that we have, really sells the town, but it's getting those quality generated leads so that we can begin that process of recruitment. So that'll be one of the things that we'll be providing for council updates related to this funding and reallocation of that. Next slide, please. Again, summarizing from the strategic leadership plan, we have some of the work that we'll be doing from the admin and planning division, which will include the Rooney Property Master Plan. We've identified $35,000 for that. We'll be conducting a housing assessment, dark sky code updates, and design standard updates. Some of the members of the council might ask why we're allocating what seems to be a large amount of funding for the bottom three projects. I'll start with the housing assessment. What we learned from the apartment study was that we'll certainly need some support in identifying some of the areas for research and development for a housing assessment. The housing assessment anticipated to be a much more expansive effort than the apartment study, so we want to make sure that we have enough funding to make sure that we get a good plan out of that. And considering that, though, we also heard from the council that the council wants to be involved in the development of that scope of work. So as we work forward with a work plan for this, and before this plan would go out for any kind of RFP response, we'll want to have an opportunity for the town council to weigh on that scope to ensure that we get everything included in there that the council expects. In terms of the dark sky code updates, we understand regionally the importance of the dark sky code for the observatories and just maintaining that as an economic driver in respect for the University of Arizona and the other observatories. However, we understand that sometimes there's some technical expertise that's needed for us to be able to develop and ensure that any of the updates that we have coincide and actually support dark sky initiatives from the other towns and from the county. So we just want to make sure that and when we move forward with this, we do have that budget capabilities to support any technical needs that we have that arise from this study. And then finally, on the design standards, we understand that staff will generate most of the work from this, but we might need some graphic or other support elements for that to make sure that when we do the design standards that we have that capability addressed. Next slide, please. I wanted to talk a little bit about some of the major requests in permitting and just review with the council why some of these increases have incurred. Typical and standard, we have outside plan reviews for $8,000, and we have tenant improvement reviews for $2,000. What that really represents there is some capability within the budget to deal with some overflow. We take a lot of pride in CED to make sure that we're taking on the larger projects. So let's say, for example, if La Posada were coming on board soon, we'd want to make sure that the town staff are taking care of that because we want to give that concierge review related to the overall permitting as those major projects come in. However, we might have some overflow that we could work out with some second party reviewers to make sure that those other typical and customary permits are moving forward. And specifically for the third party reviews, We've increased that amount from $40,000 to $50,000, anticipating that we will have a couple large projects coming in this year. I'd also like to remind the council that this is kind of a wash situation in terms of these expenditures, because we also receive the revenue from these permits and also from expedited permits. So if there's a company that wants to come in and wants to have an expedited permit review conducted, we also know that we're collecting the fees that offset this. But really what we're establishing here is the budget capacity to be able to get any second party or third party reviews accomplished. I also would like to remind the board that we also budgeted $45,000 for credit card fees. That's really the cost of doing business from the permitting standpoint. We know that we capture those fees as we process permits, but it's just something to bring up to the council that, as a reminder, it's just one of the costs that we have for doing business. Next slide, please. In typical, the inspection and code compliance budget is fairly static from year to year. One of the highlights I just want to show is that this is kind of the typical and customary cost that we have for uniforms, for printing and binding and field supplies. But I also wanted to demonstrate and show that we're allocating for the first time in the budget $10,000 worth of overtime. What we've been doing currently is we allow for comp time to be accrued for employees for inspections. But anticipating that we'll have a lot of special inspections coming up, we wanted to account for some overtime so that we had that covered, the budget capability of moving forward for some of the larger projects. Next slide, please. And that would end my presentation. Mayor, members of the council, I'll be happy to entertain any questions you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Melcher. Questions, council, for Councilmember Bowen?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Paul, thank you for your presentation. Would like to ask you a little bit more about the dark skies and the design code updates. The first question I'd like to ask you is, in your view, what would happen if we made no updates to dark sky or to our design standards this year?
Thank you, Councilmember Bowen, for the question. Let me take the last one first. I'd say for the design standards, if we didn't have any changes to the design standards, you'd continue with status quo, but we have some opportunities to address certain things, even if we go down to the point of how do business operations look? Should we have different standards for drive-throughs, other considerations like that? So I think we run the risk if we don't update the design standards to not reflect any current trends or updates to those codes that seem to make sense, not only from a business stance, but also from a community standpoint, just reflecting any of those changes. From the dark skies, I would anticipate right now that we'd still be compliant with what we're expecting for the dark sky code. I just think it's an opportunity to take a look at it from a technical standpoint. We've had technological upgrades to lights, to bulbs, to all of those, you know, just in general, to all the technology that's related to lighting. So I think it's good for us to take a look to make sure that somehow as technologies move forward, that we don't inadvertently have some kind of light leak. We call it bleed or haze. So I think from that perspective, just keeping that in mind, we don't want to create any situations just because our ordinances don't reflect those changes in technology.
We have a long history of lighting complaints or instances where we've installed lighting that we thought would meet a code, but it turns out it wasn't able to, and it created hardships. I'm trying to learn a little bit more about this. I'm wondering, you know, what is making the current code difficult to follow?
Councilmember Bowen, I wouldn't say that the current code is difficult to follow or any of those deficiencies or complaints as you're describing them. I think it's more just to make sure that as our standards move forward and reflect changes in technology, it doesn't create any inadvertent impacts on the overall intent, which is to have the dark skies to accommodate the observatories.
Okay. And regarding design standards, when I listen to the complete presentation, it seems like we're very optimistic this year in terms of lots of new opportunities and a need to, you know, really increase our permitting capability. And I wanted to find out, is there any connection between that, between the permitting activity being expected to increase and perhaps some need to change our design standards to accommodate that permitting activity that we expect to increase?
Councilmember Bowen, I think that's a fair question. It might take me a little bit longer to formulate a response than it is right now. So,
Paul, I appreciate that. That's the goal. Maybe that's an offline thing, but that's a concern for me. And
okay.
Maybe I should just request a report on that or a formal answer so that all the council can benefit. But it's difficult to answer that something like that on the fly.
No, and thank you for recognizing that. I think that's the easiest thing that we could take a look at and figure out. As part of when we develop the scope for these various projects, that might be a component of it. So thank you, and we'll take that offline and get a response then.
Those are my questions. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Vice Mayor Barrett.
Thanks. Excuse me. I think Councilmember Bowen was getting at the same kinds of concerns that I had in terms of my questions. My main question was about the dark sky ordinance. Specifically, who requested a change to the dark sky ordinance? And is the intention to strengthen or weaken that ordinance?
Vice Mayor Barrett, thanks for that question. In terms of the overall budget, that was one of the strategic initiatives that was provided by Town Council. It was part of the ongoing discussion that we have with planning and zoning and making sure that we keep our codes up to date and current. And I don't look at it as weakening or strengthening it. I think it's just being more responsive to any of the changing conditions that might occur based on those tech upgrades or changes in technology.
Okay. So have we ever lost an employer because we have a too strict of dark sky ordinance or anything like
Mayor
that?
Vice Mayor Barrett, I've never heard of an instance like that, no. But that, you know, that would require me to go back to staff to ask that question. That's a pretty specific one regarding that. But in terms of the overall budget, I know that that's how we had looked at it from the programming perspective, is going first from the strategic leadership plan, since it was included in there, to include the budget authority to be able to conduct that this year.
Okay, so are you referring to it being in the strategic leadership plan under the item of updating codes, or did we actually specifically discuss the dark skies at the strategic leadership in the strategic leadership plan?
It was actually discussed during the strategic leadership plan. We had looked at overall a broader strategic leadership objective that include just a review of the codes, but then once we broke it down, because of the discussion, we had broken out those various elements from the overall broader strategic leadership plan element, and that's what was developed from the SLP and then made its way into the budget.
Okay, I guess my memory isn't as good because I don't remember discussing the dark skies specifically at the strategic leadership plan. Although it's possible that that did occur. It was a couple long days. So I guess, I mean, I have some concerns just because I don't necessarily feel the need to bring in a consultant to review a set of codes that we have if we don't have any problems with that set of code. So unless there's something wrong or something that needs to be corrected that can be identified, then I don't really have a desire to bring in outside help to try and make those changes or reviews. And I will also say that among the constituents that I've spoken with, I've heard many people say how much they value our dark skies codes and that that's one of the things that they love about Oro Valley. It's something I love about Oro Valley, is how well we can see the stars and the skies. So it's not just about the observatory, but also, you know, the citizens who live here really value those codes and the fact that they're able to see the stars so well. So I will admit that I have some concerns with moving forward with a dark skies code update when I can't really tell what the problem is that is needing to be addressed in terms of the dark skies code. And so anyway, so there's
Thank you, Gosh, I'm sorry. I was going to say also in the consideration for these budget requests, doesn't necessarily mean that a consultant might be hired. Let's take, for example, the dark skies code amendment. We might be able to conduct an analysis of the codes from the surrounding entities and figure out that there wouldn't be a need for to hire a consultant. Maybe it's clear that some simple adjustments, or maybe there's no adjustment is needed. But I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that for these studies that we're going to use all of the money. It's just simply allocating a certain amount of funding to ensure that if there is some technical expertise needed, that it's available.
Right. I understand that. I guess at this point, I just am concerned about us doing the analysis and updating it all, unless it's clear to me that there is a problem that needs to be addressed. So, and that's what's not clear to me, is what is the problem with our existing codes that we're trying to address? And so I just feel some concern with saying we're just going to update it, because I feel as though there's probably an objective to that update. And so I just don't know what that objective would be. So I'll just leave it at that.
No, I think Vice Mayor Barrett, that's a fair question, because I would convey this to the council is I don't think any of these planning priorities or these studies really identify a problem. It's not in search of a problem to cure or anything like that. So let's just take the housing assessment. Really what that assessment is probably going to determine is what types of the variety of housing would support the future economic plans of the town. Or let's take a look at the design standards. It's simply reflecting changes and not necessarily a problem, but maybe there are, you know, just changes in design that need to accommodate certain things. So I guess when I look at it, I don't look at it them as each one of these addresses a problem per se. It's just an opportunity to update or, you know, just provide information to the council to be able to make decisions.
Additional questions? Councilmember Bowen.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Paul, I really appreciate your touching on some topics that I had never seen before. Granted, I wasn't on council, but I had been following the budget last year. Something that was surprising for me, and it was perhaps you explained it, but I didn't follow completely, was regarding credit card fees, $45,000 and the impact. While I understand that credit card fees are part of doing business, this hadn't been mentioned in previous budgets. Could you elaborate a little bit on exactly, you know, what generates those fees, why it's important for us to know so that the council can be better informed about that, or at least this council member? Thank you.
Thank you, Council Member Bowen. I can't tell you the specific year when the town started accepting credit card fees for payment for permits, but we know with the accelerated method of doing business and conducting business online, you know, I don't even know of an entity anymore that takes cash or check. Mostly it's all or virtually all is on by credit card now. There might be some escrow accounts that get established by but check, but really it's to accommodate the business needs of all of the development community. Again, going back, we anticipate those credit card fees in that amount based on the anticipated permits coming in, because we know that it, from a budgetary standpoint, you need to account for that expenditure, knowing that you're going to recoup those revenues, though, as part of the fees that we charge for the permit reviews.
Mr. Mayor, may I also add,
please,
if you don't mind? Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, actually, our budget has always had the credit card fees allocated within departments. They're in the line item portions of the department in O&M. Mr. Melcher happened to call it out because for his budget, he has a pretty small O&M, and so it kind of stands out. But it's in Parks and Rec, it's in the Water Department, it's in any of our departments. Our finance department actually allocates what those charges are based on the overall credit card charges that we get from from our transactions. And so much like our insurance, our liability insurance is also allocated out to the departments as an expense. That's really what the credit card fees are, is everybody simply paying their fair share, so to speak. Some communities actually lump it all into one, you know, they might put it all in general administration, for example, and not allocate it out to the department. Oro Valley has been allocating it out for years.
Town Manager Jacobs, would it be possible to extrapolate, what is $45,000 in credit card fees? What does that mean in terms of transactions? Do you know, or?
I don't recall what our rate is, but this covers all of the permit fees that are collected. So all of our building permit fees, all of our plan review fees, any of the charges that are the revenues that are collected through Community and Economic Development Department are estimated, and it's through our bank's user service fee. And I don't know if Dave Gephardt or his team member can jump in about on what our percentages that we pay for our credit card fees. Don't jump too fast.
No, and Mary, I appreciate that, and I can certainly wait for that answer. It's more about learning for me.
Sure, absolutely.
Being a better reviewer. It's not something that's urgent at this moment.
It is a very fair question. And sometimes the departments will be like, how much are you putting in there? Because of course it's not anything we can really cut.
Okay. Yeah. I'll gladly defer it. Oh.
Okay. Mr. Mayor, Councilor Rowan, we can certainly provide you with that information. We'd be happy to.
Thank you. Those are my questions, Mr. Mayor.
Any additional questions? Not seeing any. Thank you, Mr. Melcher. We appreciate your presentation and response to the council's questions this evening. I think at this juncture, why don't we take a 10-minute break and then we'll come back and start with town administration. Thank you. Okay, I think we'll go ahead and resume. For those in the audience, there are 31 participants in our meeting this evening. That includes council, staff, and members of the public. The next presentation is town administration by Chris Cornelison. Chris?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Mayor and members of council, I'm pleased to round out the department presentations this evening with the town administration functions, which include obviously our town manager's office, finance, human resources, our innovation and technology department, town council, general administration, legal services, and certainly last but not least, our magistrate court. And while I will be going over the general highlights of the department budgets and the plan initiatives for the upcoming year, all of our department directors are here this evening to answer any questions that town council may have. Next slide, please. So I just want to touch a little bit on some of the major accomplishments that we've had over the last year. And to start off, we really continue to align the town's capital investments with council's strategic leadership plan, as well as the financial policies. And then also due to really the conservative budgeting practice and management, as well as a strong fund balance reserves, it is projected that we will end the fiscal year on budget in the general fund. And as you all may recall, back in August, we had Proposition 480, which was the permanent base adjustment that we presented to the community, which, as you're all aware, they ultimately approved and ratified. And then with the year of COVID-19, we've really had to adapt our operations in creating new protocols and policies, especially when including federal and state policy implementation. And so that was quite a big undertaking and accomplishment over the year as they were constantly changing. We also had to create our Zoom town council meetings, which allowed the town to continue conducting its business while also continuing engagement within the community sometimes allowing for hundreds of residents to participate in each meeting. And then as town council approved and authorized the $1 million, we developed and implemented a very robust business assistance program, the OV Safe Steps. And that was really designed to support our area businesses with financial reimbursements for PPE, marketing, and other technical assistance expenses, while also encouraging the entire community to go out and about and act in a safe manner. Next slide, please. So we then initiated advertising and recruiting volunteering opportunities within the town of Aurora Valley on the town's job opportunities webpage. And I believe that was some feedback from town council last year, and particularly you, Mr. Mayor. And so we were proud to add that aspect to it. We also established the COVID response team to evaluate research and provide some recommendation to our manager's policy team on the impacts of the various executive orders, public health advisories, special events, and other related restrictions. We are also proud to acknowledge that we realized a cost savings of $64,000 related to our peak performance improvement projects. And as mentioned during the strategic leadership plan study session, Aurora Valley's self-response rate for the census 2020 was over 78% and put us number two in the entire state. And we're very proud of that. And that's a big kudos to our communications team and working with some of our community partners. And more recently this year, we developed and created a podcast series titled This is Oro Valley with our very own town manager, Mary Jacobs, covering very interesting topics related to water, community policing, steam pump ranch, COV Safe Steps Business Assistance Program. And as Ms. Jacobs mentioned, I believe last night, we have a new one out related to the Town Council Strategic Leadership Plan. We also negotiated and brought forward a successful annexation of the Westward Look Resort, which you all reviewed and considered recently and approved. Next slide, please. And so some of the strategic leadership plan goals listed here touch on some of ours. Obviously, the administrative functions are more on the back end and support functions. So you all just adopted it, so I won't go in depth in reading them one by one, but I'll just summarize and give some highlights. So supporting our local businesses, ensuring Oro Valley continues to be one of the safest communities in the entire state of Arizona. Continuing to strengthen our community outreach while also allowing for transparency and engagement. And then continuing to build upon an efficient and high-performing organization that has really been ingrained in our culture as part of Town Manager Jacobs' initiative when she first started. And of course, with us being a heavy people service organization, recruiting and retaining talented employees is certainly imperative to all the services that we provide townwide. Next slide. So a couple of highlights regarding the budget comparison from really the current fiscal year in comparison to next fiscal year's recommended budget. And I'll just touch on some of the highlights. These were a little bit smaller departments, so our numbers aren't as big as maybe some of the other departments, but I really wanted to touch on a handful of these. And do keep in mind, just as a reminder, they do include the salary merit increases, both that council approved, I think, back in January, as well as what is being recommended for next fiscal year. So town clerk, the reason you see such a larger reduction is really due to the election. We don't plan to have an election next year. That will be in the even years of 2022. So then you'll see a variance the following budget that will go the other way. So, and then for finance, it's one of the larger variances, but as mentioned in some of our one-on-one meetings, that was really due to the new senior accountant position, as well as an asset inventory survey. Human resources, it's not a big variance, but I just wanted to mention that we did include the market class and comp compensation study. So we did include that, as well as we want to increase some of our training for our supervisors. One, information and technology, and just as a reminder, that also includes our innovation and strategy division. But one of the big numbers that has attributed to that 402 is really due to the increased software costs. We accounts to about $122,000, which is a 99.3% increase. And they also have included in there a new systems analyst position, and that's about $100,000 once you take benefits and compensation into that as well. And that'll be offset by the water utility. We also have our peak performance, which is in that department. And so we're looking to bring back pre-COVID funding for training for our staff organization-wide, and that's about $40,000. And then we have about $70,000 for townwide safety and PPE, because we do plan to still be in somewhat of a pandemic for the next year. And then I think the big number that really jumps out, which I know we've covered in some of the previous presentations in our one-on-one, but that $12.7 million line item, $10 million of that is contingency for PSPRS, and that has been a big initiative for town council, and so that is a big chunk of that money. There's also $1.3 million of ARP money, and as Mr. Kiesler presented last night, that includes about $800,000 for facilities. And then we have about $200,000 for OV Next Steps, and that's the transition from OV Safe Steps to the next phase, whatever that may be, as we're still developing that for OV Next Steps. And then $100,000 for the regional preschool initiative, and $35,000 for Ruini Ranch Master Plan. Next slide, please. And so for the general administration, that budget really accounts for general overhead, non-departmental specific costs, community partnerships, as you see on this slide, and some transfers out. I'll just briefly mention that we have sustained support level for the Children's Museum, SACA, and the Chamber of Commerce. We did have a slight reduction for Visit Tucson. And they went from 275 to 250,000, but that was more due to the reduced bed tax revenues, as we certainly value our partnership with them, and that was not bearing on that. So, and then also the town manager has included 30,000 for the UA Center for Innovation, the incubator project that continues to build upon their successes. So, next slide, please. So in regards to the regional preschool initiative, it's really the Preschool Promise Scholarship Program, and that's a one-time investment to expand access to quality preschool education for Oro Valley residents. Just make a note that that's a partnership with City of Tucson and Pima County. Pima County, I think, is putting in $10 million for themselves directly. And then we've included some funding for the conservation fund regarding the Vistoso property. And then also we have our, one of the main highlights is a continued contract for animal care services, and that's through Pima County. Next slide, please. So in regard to employee benefits, the town has been self-funded since fiscal year 2012-2013. And provides both a PPO plan and a high deductible health plan with an accompanying health savings account. So we do have a pretty healthy reserve of $2.3 million, which is good. And although we did not see an increase last year regarding dental, we will see a slight increase of 5%. And as mentioned, this was brought up last year, as we wanted to increase our clinic hours due to the high use. And so we've had about 2,700 encounters this year, and that's in comparison to 2,000 last year. And so it was a difference of 700, which has been great. And another thing that our employees have really taken advantage of is the virtual visits, and we've had 771 virtual visits, which is great. And just a big kudos to to Mary Jacobs and then also Town Council for your investment and support for these programmings, these programs, because our organization really does a great job of promoting health and wellness. And we hear that often from our health insurance broker, CBIS, and they are able to compare and talk to the various health providers throughout the region. And they often hear that feedback about how engaged our employees are, how educated they are on health and wellness. And so we really appreciate and value our employees and them taking the time to really be engaged and utilize these great services to them, because ultimately that helps keep costs low. And more importantly, it ensures that they have a healthier and safer life long term, which is beneficial for all of us. Next slide, please. So looking forward for the next year is just some major initiatives. And I mentioned the transition from OB Safe Steps to OB Next Steps. And we will still be working closely with the Chamber of Commerce. That was a big part of our success. And we really built that that relationship and partnership. And I know the mayor and many on council also partook in that that effort. And then we're also looking to develop a more robust tourism strategy. And so that is, we'll be working in conjunction with Visit Tucson, but really evaluating our approaches and being more specific and taking a look at how we can continue to build on our success in the future years. And so we'll be looking to develop that. And I mentioned the salary market and class and comp study, and then also updating our town personnel policies. And that's important to mention here because that will be coming before town council. And that is a major undertaking as we, as our HR director, Judy Boros, needs to go and benchmark and look at case laws as it relates to federal and state laws, as well as some of the case studies that have come up to ensure that we are in compliance. Next slide, please. So one big component here, and I know I've heard it from some on council, is the transition the court to a paperless environment where court users will have easier access to court information. And so that kind of touches on our peak performance initiative, but I know that's also been a special interest of town council members as well. And then our court and legal will work with various town and community partners, including at the county, to continue expanding our resolution or diversion court, which includes our drug court and mental health court. So resolution court really provides opportunities for individuals who are convicted of certain crimes to address substance abuse, which are often in conjunction with mental health issues. And then some exciting news, as approved last night, we are including some bond financing for golf and parks and recreation related improvement projects. Next slide, please. And wrapping up is, we will obviously, with the recent annexation of Westward Look, we'll continue to pursue top priority annexations as identified and defined by town council's annexation strategy, which you approved in the last year. And then we're also, we'll be implementing some of our, a water customer service and billing software, and that's Spry Point, and I know Water Utility is excited about that. And then also for that effect impacts a couple of our departments, we'll also be implementing SmartGov, and that'll help on business licensing, and it ties in permitting, plan review, inspections, as well as code enforcement. And I know this was mentioned in all of our one-on-ones with council members, but we'll also be doing some consolidation of our data center. And just one other one that I wanted to mention was we're looking to implement some facility security enhancements for our water utility. Really what that is centralized video and access control system for all of their facilities. So updating a lot of those technological aspects. So with that, Mr. Mayor and members of council, that concludes my presentation, and we are available here should you have any questions. Thank you.
Yeah. Council questions? If we could go back to, thank you. What? Vice Mayor Barrett?
Sure.
Sorry, I was still on mute. Thank you, Mr. Cornelison, for your presentation. And thank you to the administrative staff who I think did a really good job responding to the pandemic throughout this year. And I know that threw a lot of curves in just the operations and administration of the town. So I think you all did an excellent job responding to that, along with many of our departments. But I did see a lot of the things that you did. So thank you very much for your work and effort on that. I've got a couple of questions. First, you have an analyst in the budget, which you say is offset by the water utility. And I'm trying to understand a little bit better how that works, since the water utility is an enterprise fund. How are we offsetting an analyst in the management side?
Sure, I'll take a stab at that. And if Mr. Boyer wants to jump in, he can fill in any gaps that I have. But that position will be within the Innovation and Technology Department, so it will report directly to that department as part of our information and technology. But they will be providing direct support to the water utility. And so as you mentioned, they are an enterprise, they will offset some of those or majority of those costs. We do have, for example, another information and technology staff member who provides a lot of service to our police department, but they are housed also in the information and technology department.
And if I may build upon what Mr. Cornelison said, the water utility does not have the kinds of, basically they are an enterprise fund, Vice Mayor, but they pay their fair share of all of the administrative functions through an administrative overhead charge, which is about $1.1 million that goes to the general fund. That's their share of my time, human resources time, your time, the facilities, legal, those kinds of things, including IT. And what we have found is that chargeback is an easier way to account. Rather than having that person be an employee of water, they're housed, because we're a small organization. Larger, like the city of Tucson, they have their own IT people right in their water department. They have their own HR people embedded right in their department. That's because we're small, everything is centralized. And so then we calculate what is water utilities' fair share, and then they transfer it back. And so basically what we did was we upped their administrative allocation to cover this new position.
Okay, that's a good answer, thank you. My next one is sort of a thought that maybe we can circle back to. I feel like there has to be some clearer way in the budget to recognize the PSPRS payments, because they're such a unique one-time thing, both the bonding and the one-time payment. When we kind of have them separated and then lumped into these different categories, I think it makes it relatively confusing, just for the public as taking a look at the document. And so I know we can say, well, that's this or that's that, but I'd just like us to give a little bit of thought to how we could properly allocate those in the budget, or message them, or chart the, bar graphs or something that kind of helps them be understood a little bit better or separated out. So I don't want an answer to that right now. It's just sort of a going forward thought, if there's a way to do that. And then my next question is about the regional preschool. Is that something that has come to council? Have we approved an IGA for the regional preschool?
No, Vice Mayor, you have not. That would come forward in the future. The town manager will bring that forward for your consideration in the future.
Right. So, Vice Mayor, this is my recommendation that we do contribute that $100,000 to this program. However, that would be subject to an IGA with Pima County that would come forward to you. And so right now it's a placeholder that's included in the budget, and it would be the town's share, small share, $100,000, which would be our contribution for over a 3-year period, Pima County has allocated $10 million a year for this program. The city of Tucson, I think, has put in at least a couple million dollars. And so this is really intended to be a bit of a regional effort. And while we don't have quite as many, income qualified families that would be eligible for these partial scholarships to get young people into quality preschool programs, it is anticipated that the number of preschool age children in Oro Valley that would qualify would exceed our contribution. So there would still be a need for additional funds. They're not asking for any more money. They're just looking for a way to demonstrate that all of the communities support this workforce effort. So, but it is certainly a council decision, and you can leave it in the budget and then discuss it when the IGA comes forward. But I have been in touch with Pima County, and they are working on an IGA to present that I'll present to you in the near future.
Okay, so you mentioned that Pima County is putting in $10,000 per year for 3 years. So are
$10 million.
I'm sorry, $10 million. Yeah. Sorry, 30 is low on this. $10 million for the next 3 years. Are we expected to put in $100,000? Is that $100,000 for 3 years, or we're going to put in $100,000 every year for 3 years?
Vice Mayor, I've made it clear to the proponents that this is the town's one-time contribution, that it's intended to cover 3 years, so basically $33,000 a year for the next 3 years, and it's up to them to allocate it.
Okay. Are Marana and Sarita contributing or being involved at all?
My last conversation with the Marana town manager was that he expected to also make a recommendation. I haven't touched base with him to find out if that was in his final recommended budget, but he led me to believe that he was also going to be putting in a commensurate amount in his recommended budget.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
Other questions? Councilmember Bowen, and then Councilmember Nicholson.
Thank you. And one thing I wanted to say is I've noticed from the other council members that they've been much more polite and correct. And I do want to say thank you for all the work that's been done. I know I've asked a ton of questions and haven't really offered enough thank yous for all the work. And in terms of what I observed, something that was really informative for me in my review process was I learned a lot about capital and all of the things that you need to do in terms of keeping Oro Valley a very pleasant place to live. And I wanted to ask Chuck Boyer, I asked the same question regarding stormwater. What are the projects that, might be out there in the near term where we're coming to capacity? It might not be an urgent, issue for this budget year, but within the next couple of years, are there any areas in which we're kind of coming to our IT capacity and council should be aware of that?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, I feel like we've been really blessed to have councils that have been very supportive of IT and the needs that we have. Honestly, as we're looking at transitions more towards cloud technologies, our biggest need is going to be in bandwidth. And so that's really what we're looking at is more of an operational cost instead of a capital cost. We still have those capital outlays, but if you look year over year, our O&M keeps increasing. So does that answer your question?
Yes. Yes. So okay. Bandwidth is your major concern, not necessarily any particular infrastructure.
Correct.
Okay. And then I had one more question for the town manager. Something that I had noticed is we have a policy of 5% of our sales tax being allocated for capital, by rule. If this ever turned out to be a situation in which, it's perceived to be inadequate in the near future, what would be the path by which we could consider a change for that? Would that be a staff recommendation, or would that be something where the council would need to direct the staff?
Council Member Bowen, that's a very good question. It was my initial recommendation 3 years ago that the 5% be incorporated into the budget. And so I certainly would not hesitate to bring that type of a recommendation forward to you. You know, it's a careful balance, right? Because the higher percentage of what I'll call fenced off dollars, right, that goes into one area means that there's not a lot of flexibility to move things around. We spend more than 5% on it. That's just what I consider to be the minimum. That's the minimum that goes into the capital fund every year. So far, that policy seems to have served us well. And we have not been afraid as a team to bring forward more capital projects than what that 5% covers, because that's that prioritization process. But certainly if it's something that the council specifically wants to look at, we'd be happy to review it with you in the future. I applaud your interest in wanting to ensure that capital continues to be, that we don't let go of our capital needs. And I have explained it to other folks in the past, you know, our economy goes up and down. That's just the nature of the beast, right? And so what I wanted to try to avoid is when you have to go on a diet, right, the last thing that you want to do, and I've seen many communities over the years in recessions, the first thing that goes is capital and vehicle replacements and maintenance, and everything goes. And in order to keep to the very minimum. And then when you come out of it in 2 or 3 years, you're so far backlogged that you can't catch up, right? And so to me, that 5% means that, you know, if we have to go on a diet, it goes on a diet at both ends. But we still have a minimum amount that we continue to invest in our capital, at least for maintenance and major things that we don't want to lose, that we don't want to lose sight of. And so, you know, it's a bit of a insurance policy, so to speak. And I would expect, you know, again, because of support from council, that capital continues to be something that is important to this community and is something we recognize must be funded appropriately.
Thank you. Well, those are my questions.
Thank you, Councilmember Green.
I have a question for Chuck Boyer, if we could bring Chuck back. Hi, Chuck. The bandwidth issue seems to be a really important thing, and I'm kind of living in yesteryear. Would it be possible to have maybe a study session to look at that issue and how we might approach it going forward?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Green, yes, we could, you know, whatever the council desires, we could do that. Honestly, our bandwidth utilization is, in the relative scheme of things, is relatively low. So it's more of how do we keep, it's a balancing act. How do we keep on top of the trends? You know, so the shift to cloud computing, we have to do that in a slow, methodical order to make sure that we maintain town services. But as we do, we are slowly increasing that bandwidth. You know, the biggest surge that we saw was really with COVID and most people working from home, our internet usage jumped considerably, but it didn't exceed the capacity that we had already built into place. So I wouldn't say it's necessarily warranted, but if council would like more information, it would be, I guess, up to you folks to request that. We could do that.
Okay. Thank you.
Member Nicholson?
I want to talk about Visit Tucson a little bit. I think they were funded either at $275,000 or $300,000. They're funded at $250,000 now. And we're also bringing in Westward Look, and I assume we're bringing in income on that pretty almost immediately. And I know all hotels all across the nation are getting hit pretty hard. And most people probably don't know that Visit Tucson is primarily funded by Tucson. They're based on percentage-wise, so they got a really bad hit. They were pretty much gutted. I've always been impressed by Brent Durrett. I think he does a really good job as a CEO and hiring great people. And he's thrifty, I would say, with his spending. And I was wondering if maybe we can get an approximation of how much Westwood will bring in for the following years, and then kind of preemptively raise the amount that we give to Visit Tucson for next budget session or next year. So I don't know if we can do something about it this year or not.
Mr. Mayor and Council Member Nicholson, I do want to let you know that the number that you are seeing does not include the Westward Look numbers in the recommended budget at this point. That will be added, the Westward Look, the additional $25 million, and a few other adjustments. And I will also include and be prepared to share with you what will be additional to the 250 for Visit Tucson for next fiscal year. So so I just, because it's not in the published budget at this point, it's not included, but I have already committed to Mr. Durad and to the Westward Look to negotiate in good faith with them regarding a fair share of the bed tax revenue to go to Visit Tucson, because yes, they are our partner for sure. And we do want to continue that partnership.
Okay, thank you.
Councilmember Green? Oh, I just see your hand up.
Sorry.
It's That's mechanical. Okay. It's okay. Councilmember Bowen?
Thank you. I just had a follow-up for Chuck Boyer regarding cloud computing. And I think, you know, now is a time when we're being very strategic and we're thinking long-term. I know there's some trade-off. I'm not an IT professional, but in some trade-off between having your data locally versus on the cloud. And in terms of uptown data, can you describe for us some of the safeguards that we need to take as a town before moving data up to the cloud to ensure that we're as safe as possible? And in other words, you know, what makes being on the cloud a good trade-off because of the lower costs when we know we can guarantee the security rather than keeping the data local where we know we can control it?
Yes, Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen. It's, again, it's always, there's always trade-offs. So I would want to clear up a misconception that just because we can touch the data, that we can hang on to it, that it's safe. The security environment is ever evolving and is very risky. In a lot of cases, some of the cloud environments can do it better than we can because we guarantee you that Amazon has a bigger budget than we do to protect our data. So, you know, from a sense of security, that's fine. What we do is we have a legal team that consists of Joe Andrews, Mark Neihart, and myself. And we review every contract that comes through with security in mind and protecting the town's interests as we are moving things up to the cloud. And understand, we're not doing anything sensitive in the cloud at this point in time. So, you know, things like public safety, that is all on site or with one of our regional partners. So, you know, we're talking about, you know, like our new permitting system. That is going to be cloud hosted. Doesn't have the same level of sensitivity as public safety data, for example.
Thank you. Okay. Uh-huh. That's my question, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Mr. Cornelison, the visitor attraction marketing strategy or plan was an item in our current strategic leadership plan. It was, I don't think it was big, you know, got started. It's rolled over for our new strategic leadership plan. It's shown as a major initiative. I don't recall seeing any funding tied to this particular project. Could you explain why? And it concerns me that I think that we have a great story. We have some wonderful experiences with bringing on the Westward Look Resort. We've increased the number of rooms, I think close to 1,000. With the marketplace, proposed hotels. We have some incredible outdoor opportunities with Coronado National Forest, Catalina. I won't go on, but so I guess the question is there funding for this particular major initiative?
Yes, Mr. Mayor, thank you for bringing that up. There is funding. There's $75,000, and I believe it, we're using ARP funding for that, and so specifically for that initiative.
All right. Yeah, I saw that, so I just wanted to go ahead.
Thank you. Yes.
Thank you. Other questions? All right. Thank you, Mr. Cornelison. We appreciate it. We'll move on to capital improvement program, and Mr. Dykeman will make that presentation.
Great. Good evening, Mr. Mayor and Council. We're here before you this evening to present and discuss the 10-year capital improvement program as part of the manager's recommended budget. And I just want to give a thanks to Councilmember Bowen for that question a few minutes ago on capital. It was almost a perfect segue into right now. So a majority of what we'll be talking about tonight is kind of really an overview, as departments have touched on a lot of these department presentations during the presentations the past few days. I just kind of wanted to give a quick review and hone in on the financial side of it and the funding mechanisms used to advance the proposed capital projects. I don't know if we can pull the PowerPoint up or not.
It'll be up momentarily.
All right. There we go. We can go ahead and jump to the next slide. Cool. Yeah, so as you know, the town prepares a comprehensive 10-year capital improvement program where we look at the current and future needs for the town and how to address those needs given a finite number of resources. As you would imagine, planning for the next 12 to 18 months, it's going to be a lot more straightforward than planning 8, 9, 10 years from now, because we don't really have a crystal ball to know what exactly the year 2028 is going to look like. This is always a fluid document, with the outer years subject to shifts and changes, deletions, and additions. With that said, year one, that is fiscal year 2021-22, is formally budgeted with all dollar amounts included in the recommended budget. Years 2 through 10 are used as a planning document or a kind of a roadmap for moving forward. This also aids us in other areas such as, you know, the town's 5-year financial forecast, which utilizes this document to help build out capital costs into the future. And kind of just speaking on that fluidity, the CIP program shown tonight, it does not include anything in relation to the bond financing that was discussed last night. The finance team will be going back to work and making those needed adjustments to the budget prior to adoption. Just want to put that little caveat out there. So when we're discussing and reviewing potential projects, they're always thoroughly reviewed with a number of different criteria. And first, and obviously, all projects within the CIP program, we ensure that they reflect the goals and strategies that are in the adopted Council Strategic Leadership Plan. Next slide, please. So the recommended capital improvement program for the upcoming fiscal year totals about $22.8 million and can be broadly defined into these different categories. CIP planning begins in earnest really back in the fall. For example, so that $5.7 million figure listed on this slide for parks and rec related projects, like, that doesn't actually capture the recently adopted master plan or council's direction with bond financing for key park related projects. The next time the budget is brought forward, you know, those numbers will be revised accordingly. But even with that aside, you can see here water systems, park and rec assets, and then streets and roads that make up the majority of the CIP program. As these three areas make up the bulk of town assets, it's not unusual to see the majority of the investment put into these areas as well. Next slide, please. So with the $22.8 million investment into capital for next year, you know, a logical question is, where does the funding come from? So this chart before you here broadly breaks down the CIP program by funding source. Quickly running through this pie chart, I'll kind of give a brief description of each of these slices. So starting right there at the top at that like 12 o'clock position, we have the general fund at, you know, a little under $1.3 million. Generally, capital items within the general fund come from a one-time revenue source. For fiscal year 2021-22, this is going to be federal stimulus money from the American Rescue Plan Act. Skipping the highway fund momentarily and jumping to the capital fund, because it ties nicely to the general fund, you can see the capital fund there, just under $6.4 million. The capital fund is used to fund a large portion of the town's CIP program, as well as the town's vehicle replacement program. And for the most part, the fund itself doesn't really generate revenue. Instead, we transfer funds, usually from the general fund, into the capital fund to pay for projects. So for fiscal year 2021-22, we'll be transferring almost $6 million into the fund. That $6 million is a combination of three different items. The first will be vehicle reserves at about $740,000. For each vehicle the town has, we calculate a useful life for that, an estimated replacement cost, and then we set that amount aside over time. So when it's time to finally replace that asset, we have adequate funding available and ready to go. Secondly, and this was kind of mentioned yesterday in the budget overview as well, the town's expected to receive some stimulus money from the American Rescue Plan Act. So we anticipate receiving about $5.5 million next year. We left $1.3 million in the general fund to pay for specific facility maintenance items and programs. And then the remaining $4.2 million is said to be transferred into the capital fund to pay for current and future year CIP projects. We're still waiting on final guidance from the Treasury Department on how exactly these funds can be used. But for right now, they're scheduled as a transfer into the capital fund. And then the third one we'll be making is, and mentioned it just a few minutes ago too, related to our town policies, is a 5% transfer of general fund sales taxes to be dedicated for capital projects. And for the upcoming fiscal year, this is gonna be just a little over $1 million. Jumping back to the highway fund now, you can see that they're at $2.25 million. These are gonna be HERF revenues. The town uses these to pay for road projects, such as like the pavement preservation program. Jumping down, you can see the PAG RTA fund there, about $1.4 million. This is a combination of potential grants for wildlife linkages, as well as existing fund balance due to savings and other projects. And Mr. Kiesler kind of touched on that last night a little bit as well. The roadway impact fee fund, that's exactly what it sounds like. These are roadway impact fees dollars, and these will be used to do a final seal and finish off the LaToya project for next year. The community center fund, even though this slide was put together just a week or two ago, it feels a little dated already. but that $2.8 million figure there represents the revenues collected from the half-cent sales tax, and obviously this will probably be changing moving forward. The water impact fee fund, again, that's exactly as it sounds also. These are water impact fee dollars collected. They're used to expand and enhance the town's water system. The groundwater preservation fee, about $1.7 million for next year. These funds are restricted to renewable water resources and infrastructure. While they formally are in the water utilities operating fund, we kind of curtain them off. And we're using them actually specifically in this upcoming year for the Northwest Recharge Recovery and Delivery System. We have the Water Utility Operating Fund there, about $1.6 million. The bulk of this revenue is coming from water rates. These types of projects in here are going to be CIP projects, are going to be well rehabbed, valve replacements, important stuff like that. And then lastly, up top, we have the Stormwater Utility Fund at about $800,000. This is a combination of stormwater-related revenues as well as funding from outside sources, such as the Pima County Flood Control District, to help advance and fund certain capital projects. Next slide, please. Just quickly taking a look at this chart, this is the current full 10-year CIP program. It mirrors the chart from earlier that shows, water, parks, streets. I know these three are still the biggest area investments even over the next 10 years. And kind of speaking to that fluidity again, you can see here other public facilities at, $4.2 million over the next 10 years. And that represents, known projects that we know about now for the next 10 years. However, what's actually done over the next 10 years, may be different depending on, how the town continues to grow. Next slide, please. I just wanted to wrap up by highlighting a few projects and kind of break down their funding sources and amounts. This is not really meant to be an exhaustive list, of course, but just touching on some of the more expensive or the higher visibility projects planned for this year. The first is the Lambert Lane pavement overlay. Mr. Kieser spoke about this project last night. This project, it's in the current fiscal year, and we do anticipate carrying over about $300,000 and then adding about $275,000 in additional HERF funding for next year for a total of that $575,000 to finish the project off. Next on the list is the town's pavement preservation program, which is budgeted at $1.6 million for next year. Funding for this is also coming from HERF revenues. The First Ave Bridge deck repair project, this was identified as a needed project. And it's actually one of those projects budgeted to utilize that unspent PAG RTA dollars. We felt this project was a perfect candidate for these dollars because, you know, once you use those, they're gone. A project like pavement preservation, the town is going to keep doing that each year. And we definitely don't want to dedicate, you know, a one-time revenue source towards a project, you know, that's going to have, you know, multiple iterations into the future. And finally, the Moore Road asphalt overlay project there, that's a project actually coming out of our capital fund at about $527,000. Next slide, please. Moving over to our water and stormwater infrastructure. The big one on here is going to be the Northwest Recharge Recovery and Delivery System at $4.4 million for next year. And it's about $17 million over the next 3 years. The $4.4 million in the budget for next year is a combination of water impact fees and that groundwater preservation fee. Both the Nokoma Sky Well and the Steam Pump Well Equipping Projects, they're budgeted next year. It's a cost of close to $1.2 million, and they're both being funded with water impact fees. And then the next two projects on the list, the Gravel Mine Wash and the Sierra Wash, these are both stormwater-related projects. And as alluded to earlier, these are at least, you know, they're partially reliant on assistance with the Pima County Flood Control District to complete. So if you were to, you know, open up the budget document and scroll through, kind of look through the onion skin per se of the budget, you'll see in the stormwater fund $300,000 in budgeted potential revenue to assist with these projects. Next slide, please. Jumping over to Parks and Rec. Obviously, with council direction last night, there's going to be several projects that are going to be added to the CIP program. I was actually joking with Ms. Diaz-Tran earlier today, letting her know, I was like, I think your CIP program is going to get a big makeover the next week or two. But here are some projects, you know, identified as is right now. First off, we do have improvements over at JDK Park that are planned for next year. This is budgeted at about $320,000 and is coming out of the town's capital fund. There's continued investment and work at Steam Pump Ranch. We have the current garage project, which will be carrying over into the new fiscal year for completion. The recommended budget also includes a $480,000 investment into the barbecue and two bunkhouses. Again, this is funding coming from the town's capital fund. We also have about $200,000 in the capital fund for additional improvements out in Naranja Park for next year. With the potential for bond financing, the scope of Naranja is obviously changing, but this project's still on the books for right now. And lastly to note, the town has set aside $1.5 million a year for the next 2 years in the capital fund to help advance and fund projects that are identified in the Parks and Rec Master Plan. Next slide, please. I just wanted to touch just on a few projects that maybe, you know, perhaps don't get the same level of pageantry as a park or a road project, but are still really important to the town. The recommended budget includes the replacement of the police mobile command post. This will be about $275,000 or so from the town's capital fund and should really greatly aid the police department when, you know, responding to incidents. Just talking about this a few minutes ago, but the IT department has identified the need to migrate our data centers from their current location over to a police facility. This is estimated to be about $300,000, and again, coming from the town's capital fund. Always important to maintain our town-owned assets and facilities, and the recommended budget sets aside about $1.2 million to do that for next year. This funding source is actually coming directly from the general fund, with about $800,000 of that $1.25 million set aside as American Rescue Plan dollars. And then similar to the facility maintenance program, it's the town's vehicle replacement program. So this $1.7 million figure, it includes all necessary vehicle replacements and also includes several large pieces of heavy equipment as well. As mentioned earlier, the bulk of this funding comes from those set aside vehicle reserves that we make each year. Next slide, please. This slide just quickly shows projects that we anticipate on carrying over into the next fiscal year. I'll quickly just touch on two of them that may need a little more detail to them. First, you can see we're planning to carry forward $300,000 related to vehicle replacements. And this is really just due to COVID and the strain it put on supply chains, where we're unsure if we could fully outfit all of our new police cruisers by that June 30th deadline. So what this means is just that the current vehicles will maybe stay on the road for a month or two while we wrap up the outfitting and get them ready to go. The other item that may need a bit of explanation on here is that golf course irrigation project. When the recommended budget was put together, we hadn't gotten bids back on the project yet. So the recommended budget does assume the project commencing about now or so with significant carry forward and then more funding for next year. And as bids came in substantially over budget, this project is kind of being relooked at right now. So these figures will be revised when you see the budget again in June. And with that, that really kind of concludes my presentation. I'd be happy to answer any kind of questions you have. And I believe we have department heads on as well. Should you have any specific questions on project scope or timeframe? Thank you.
Thank you. Council Member Green? No? Okay. I think that was my hand, not your hand. Any questions from council for Mr. Dykeman? Council Member Bowen?
Just, thank you for the presentation. You know, it's been really encouraging for me to see progress being made at Steam Pump Ranch. One aspect of Steam Pump Ranch that's significant, it's a very large building, is the Proctor Lieber House. And I don't know if people have had a chance to go in and look inside there, but at one time it was something that was quite impressive, and it's a significantly big building. I was wanting to ask Parks and Recreation if there are any long-term plans for the Proctor Lieber House, or is it still pretty much an open issue as to what we would do?
Council Member Bowen, so as we mentioned earlier, the single building left to be identified for funding is the Proctor Lieber House.
I
would imagine, I'm sorry?
I missed that, I'm sorry.
Oh, I said the single largest building within the historic core that's left to be funded for restoration is the Proctor Lieber House. As we talked earlier, the garage will be done this calendar year, and then the two bunkhouses and the barbecue were included in Mr. Dykeman's presentation. Considering the action that was taken last night and the funding that was identified for that could potentially be utilized as Steam Pump, I would highly recommend that the Proctor Lieber House be one of those projects. The Historic Preservation Commission has identified their priorities in terms of future funding, and they want to prioritize the full restoration of all buildings within the historic core. And so that would be the last building. We did do an adaptive reuse study last year as far as a potential public-private partnership. And that was really the only building that had any type of possibilities because of its size. It's a pretty good size. And so, you know, that could certainly be something that we explore in more depth, but we have not tackled that project quite yet.
Thank you. That was my question.
The questions from council? Vice Mayor Barrett.
Thanks. Christy, I'll let you stay on because I have a couple of questions about parks. First of all, I mentioned this in my one-on-one, but I wanted to comment on it to the rest of the council. So I know in the strategic leadership plan, I was not sure about JBK Park. Well, I took some testers with me to JBK Park to check it out for myself. And I decided that I'm fully on board with replacing some of that playground equipment at JBK Park and updating it. So
great.
I just wanted to circle back with the council, because that was a comment I'd made previously at the strategic leadership plan. I've had a change of heart after bringing my professional testers to the park. So that's one comment I wanted to let the council know. And
what,
then,
what are the ages of those professional testers, Vice Mayor?
4 and 9. So, and they were playing with a lot of other kids of all different ages. So it's still fun the way it is. But yeah, there's parts that could use a bit of updating. So yeah, thank you. And then let's see. And then I wanted to comment on the $1.5 million that's available for Parks and Recreation capital. What I'd really like to see done and proposed, and maybe the staff could come back with, Christy, especially you, with some suggestions of what would fit into this, is I'd really like to see that $1.5 million go towards something that could get started and get done, especially at Naranja Park, whether that's the grading for the fields or the splash pad, but something that's pretty much close to ready to move on without having to create the entire rest of the plan and costing and all of that. Because I know that anything that's done with the bond financing will take a little while to get that whole project just completed and underway and moving. And so that's kind of my thought for the $1.5 million is because our first year that we came in with the budget, we did the playground at Naranja Park, and that's been a good success. But then last year, we weren't really able to allocate resources towards Parks and Recreation capital because of, well, I mean, I guess we did at Steam Pump Ranch and some other things, but because of COVID and things. And we had the $300,000 in the budget that we were going to allocate towards high needs from the Parks and Rec needs assessment, but we didn't end up using that $300,000 in last year's budget. So because of that kind of delay in those things, I'd like to see that $1.5 million go towards something that can kind of hit the ground moving forward. So anyway, I'll just throw that out there to the council and ask that Christy maybe come back with her best suggestions for the council as to where we could put that $1.5 million.
And Mr. Then, Kiesler, Vice Mayor, Mr. Kiesler has his hand up. Maybe he's wanting to tag on.
Maybe he has a good suggestion.
Hi, Mayor, thank you. Thank you for recognizing me, Vice Mayor. Thanks for the question. I really want a cautious and unplanned approach. We've graded pretty much all of the existing easy land. And I can speak personally on this because it's been me and my people who have done all of the grading out there. So we've designed it so far. If we were to just jump in, let's just say do the grading without having a fully put together plan, there's a high possibility we could be throwing away good money without having that full picture in front of us. I caution us to do something on a large scale that spends a lot of money. And to me, $1.5 million is a lot of money. I caution us jumping too quickly on that. We do need proper planning on this. Otherwise, we don't know what we're gonna get into if we kind of go haphazard. That's a cautionary tale.
Right. Yeah, thank you for your perspective on that. I appreciate that. And I don't think I'm trying to suggest that we just, you know, haphazard it. I'm sorry if it came across that way. But in the Parks and Rec plan, I guess part of the reason for me commenting on this is I followed the whole Parks and Rec plan and all those public meetings and things. And they did comment to us at several points in time as they were designing Naranja Park and doing different things, that there are certain portions of it that are, you know, easier and more accessible to go ahead and move forward with in stages. And I think one of the ones that they commented on was the splash pad, because it was planned to be adjunct and adjacent to the playground. And then, you know, obviously the fields and their grading are probably going to take a little bit more work, but I think that what we've heard from the citizens and the letters we've received and things is that the fields are just a high priority. So, but I agree with you that that level of grading for those fields is going to definitely take some work. And thanks for your comments and professionalism. I know you guys will do a great job.
No, thank you. And on the splash pad too, we designed and built the splash pad ourselves. I mean, we hired a consultant, of course, but I oversaw that effort when we built it for the Aquatic Center. That alone, the equipment used for that does take a little bit for us to pull together. That's not something that we can just pull off the shelf. But the splash pad I see as a later element, only in that splash pads and dirt do not do well together. And if you put the splash pad in before we do major grading operations, I'd be afraid that we might get some introduction of dust and dirt into the system. Because it's not an inexpensive system, the pool system that goes with the splash pad. And again, just based upon my experience of building all these things in the past.
Okay, thanks. I mean, I think that's why I was, asking for you to come back with some suggestions for what that $1.5 million could look like, is because I don't anticipate that I know everything about grading or designing, but I have just followed along what the consultant has been saying and at all of the sessions and stuff. And he had identified the splash pad as being one of the first items to go. So, I mean, if that's different, then that's definitely something that we would need to discuss. But at any rate, and when I say to get going, I don't mean it's going to be done in 3 months or, but I just mean something that's not going to take an entire year of planning and financing before. That's kind of what I mean. I'm saying. It's still in this year's fiscal year budget. But anyway, just because we have that $1.5 million in there, and it might be nice to have a couple suggestions as to what that could go towards, I guess.
I understand. Okay, thank you.
Is where I'm coming from. Okay, thank you, though. I really appreciate that information. That's really helpful.
Any additional?
That's it. Yeah, thanks. Sorry. Mayor Winfield, can I say one more thing?
Yeah.
I just want to apologize to Mr. Paul Melcher about the dark skies thing. I feel like that came across wrong. I was just surprised and didn't remember discussing it before. So I just want to apologize to him that I didn't remember that from before. Thanks.
Any additional questions? Seeing none, Ms. Jacobs, looking back to the timeline that you presented last night, I believe with Mr. Dykeman's presentation that we've completed all of the presentations and that there will not be a need for a May 19th budget study session. Is that a correct assessment?
Mr. Mayor, yes, I think that is correct. We will provide the council with updated recommendations in advance of the tentative budget based on our discussion tonight, what you can expect, the westward look, the bonding, and a few other small little changes. A recommended budget is never perfect. There's always something we'll have to move here or move there. We'll give you a very thorough breakdown of what that is as soon as we wrap all of that together. But if I may, before we close, I just wanted to also share the wonderful thanks that the council has given to the staff. I also share that. We have a great team. Particularly, I want to give a shout out to Michael Dykeman, Wendy Gomez, and Dave Gephardt. They really have done the lion's share of the work, in addition to the rest of my budget team, which includes Chuck Boyer and Chris Cornelison, but really all of the departments. And I want to thank the council. Your insights, your questions are very valid and welcomed. We want to provide you with the clarification. This is your budget, but it's our budget. It's our community's budget. And we want to make sure that it reflects your priorities. We want to make sure that it reflects the community's priorities. And so we so appreciate your comments and your insights. both in our private meetings and also here in the public meetings. And we look forward to working with you and finalizing this budget and then implementing it next fiscal year. So, Mr. Mayor, members of council, thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Jacobs. And I want to thank those who presented tonight, Ms. Christy Diaz-Trahan, Bernie Eaton, Paul Melcher, Chris Cornelison, and Michael Dykeman, as you've mentioned. We recognize that there's a lot of work that goes into these presentations. We also appreciate the notebook that was provided. And as I read through the, Ms. Jacobs, your overview of your recommended budget, and as I pulled out a list of all the items that related to our strategic leadership plan, I had a full page of items, and I was very pleased to see the strategic leadership plan well represented in this proposed budget. So I'm looking forward to further discussions and want to express appreciation to the council and to your executive team and for the great progress that has been made under some admittedly challenging circumstances. So with that, I believe we can adjourn tonight's budget study session. Thank you, everyone.